toes in my area cold. Dark skin, light skin, medium tones. Permitting braids, got mini afros. Thick lips, got hips, some of us don't. Big nose contour, some of us won't. Never wanna put us in the media, bro. Want a fat beauty like Kardashians, no. Want a fat beauty that my eye ain't got, yo. Wheel up the blood clot, tell her reload it. I've got the camera, my girls are posing. I need some backup, the mad ones are rolling. When women thinks I'm never at this.
Hello everyone, welcome to today's podcast where I'll be giving a reflection of week two of research in Africa in 21st century. There's a lot of content on this week, so I will try and cover everything without making it really long. I'll give a summary of each one and then see how they tie in all at the end. So yeah, hope you enjoy it. So, going to begin with the friendship and anthropology reading, which is on the reading list for that week. Let me just give kind of a little summary first before I tell you guys what I think of it. So, Paloma is the anthropologist in this reading, and Lyria is the participant. So Paloma kind of tells the story of Lyria, and Lyria helps Paloma. Paloma is a Paya, and Lyria is a Gitanos, or I don't know if I'm saying Gitanos. So they're from different parts, they're from different worlds. So Lyria, while helping Paloma with her research, knows kind of in a sense, she kind of had a sense of what Paloma's research was about, but didn't fully kind of grasp it. Also, that had a lot to do with the fact that Paloma couldn't convey the bulk of her anthropology to Lyria because of the complexity of it. So kind of as time goes on and as Paloma and Lyria get to know each other, Paloma is welcome to Lyria's world, and that's when she starts to unpack Lyria's life. Lyria is from a very strict background. She has a family, she's married, and she has a child. But as time goes, she meets someone and she falls in love with that person. So she then leaves her husband, she elopes, and 2 years later she goes into court to claim visitory rights for her child. All this time, from her eloping, from her leaving home, Paloma helps her out as much as possible. From what Paloma expresses, it seems as though Lyria was kind of the first Gitano woman to turn to the Payo courts to challenge the Gitano traditional laws and customs. It was a complex kind of dynamic. They were both from different worlds, but they could connect on different levels. They met kind of in a space that between two worlds, between the Gitano world and the Payos, between immigrants and the middle class, and between the informants and the anthropologist. So there was different layers when it comes to the differences between them. Not only was Paloma from a kind of a middle class background, an anthropologist, and also Lyria was from an immigrant background, a poorer background, and was the informant. I think these worlds, despite them being completely different and completely polar, they came together well and kind of showed how two different worlds can come together to create something, a research like this. So these worlds are kind of, they bounce from one another in a sense. And it's through kind of the anthropology that they were able to come together. So despite them being different, I think anthropology is the main thing that brought them together, and that gave them showed them the similarities that they had. I thought that was quite insightful, having to see how an anthropologist can immerse themselves into a world and be part of that world in essence, and not just be a kind of a standout. She was an anthropologist, she was a researcher, but eventually their friendship kind of overtook the research and took it a different direction. And I think this links quite well to one of the questions that is on the syllabus. Let me just have a look at that quickly, which talks about the subjectivity of the researcher and if that's something that's possible. So while reading this, I kept that in mind, and I thought, okay, is this maybe, does this come into play in this research? Can I see the subjectivity of the researcher? Is it possible for the researcher to be subjective? Let me find the question. So the question talks about if the researcher can be subjective, or whether they can be objective, which direction can they go, and also does the truth exist? I think in this case, I will say that there's no specific truth when it comes to anthropology or when it comes to doing research like this. I think it's all about seeing it from different perspectives and looking at things in a subjective lens. So realizing that the same way I could, as a human being, have subjective views, as an anthropologist, that could also come into play. So I thought that was very, very interesting, and I think this reading really summarized that theme of whether a research could be subjective, and it tied really well into that, and gave us a further in-depth analysis of whether truth can exist and whether we can it kind of just gave a good understanding of ethnography to me. Paloma immersed herself into that environment, and in doing so, she got a very valuable research out of it. So yeah, that was great. Moving on, so I will now talk about the ethical ? Key for our contradictory times, by Carlo Quazzi. I don't know if I'm really bad with the pronouncing names. This reading was quite different from the previous one. I felt like this one was more of a controversial reading, I guess I can say that. So let's get into it. This reading talks about the conference of the African Studies Associate that was held in the UK in 2018, specifically in Birmingham University. The panel was called Ethical Collaboration, and was kind of as a result of various scholars and activists from diverse backgrounds. They kind of unpacked the ways in which North and South academic collaborations are often framed, and were kind of invited to suggest ways in which these collaborations can be practiced in a more ethical ways. And in kind of discussing that, then they come to this whole idea of decolonizing the academia. So they talk about how the increasing decentering of Europe and the US as the location of knowledge production and dissemination marks a new era in the study of Africa from Africa. So in essence, what that is saying is that the extreme focus on whenever there's anything about academia, it's always centered in Europe or in the US, and that's because they're seen as the main locations for knowledge production. This alienates continents like Africa and undermines them. In talking about this, they also talk about how, for example, various scholars coming from Africa. Let's say there's a conference to do with African studies or to do with Africa in general, it's most times held in this in the Western world. And often what is even worse is that most times scholars from Africa are unable to come here based on the struggles they face due to visa. It was quite kind of an interesting idea, or an interesting observation. So the panel asked questions such as, you know, how do we ensure equitable and ethical North-South collaboration? How do we share resources, and how do we address the fact that African studies is seen by many as a field that is hostile to African scholars and scholarship? I think this was quite important because often in talking about Africa and African studies, people that are mostly alienated from this discussion is the African scholars themselves, due to various reasons, from practical to, I guess, academic to just, I think there's different aspects to that discussion, different ways they are limited. So the reading goes on to talk about keywords and starts to unpack the whole concept, what is keywords basically. And I found this very, very interesting. It links this idea of keywords to the fact that there's a superiority within the world, even when it comes to keywords. So it refers to the idea that there are various keywords that prioritize the work of the Europeans or the work of the Western scholars. So these keywords, the way the whole idea of keywords works, just even, you know, when you go into when you publish something, the fact that there's a keyword kind of system created for your work, and the fact that they European or Western scholars have access to such things prioritizes their work over the African scholars. So yeah, I think that was a very interesting, intriguing point. I thought that was a very interesting way of looking at the dynamic between the African scholars and the Western scholars, and how kind of using that idea of the keywords to explain that, yes, you know, there is a kind of there's this idea that one is better than the other, even through simple systems like, you know, the keyword system in the internet, you know. So yeah, I thought that was quite interesting. So I would leave that one there for now. I'm going to link it to the interview with Dr. Lidwig. I don't know if I'm saying her name right either. But yeah, that was a very, 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 very insightful reading. I really enjoyed it. So much to the point where I had to squeeze it somewhere in my essay. I think it was for me, I don't know how it linked to ethnography in essence. I think it gave me a bigger picture of the debate surrounding, like, just generally, like, research and the research world, and how there's any kind of there's a bias in essence. It didn't give me more insight into ethnography per se, but it did give me an idea of the general debate and the concerns surrounding the whole idea of decolonizing the African the academia or African studies in general. Also, the reading talks about how the just last one last thing sorry I know I said I'll be done but one last thing that I forgot to mention is that it talks about how the Western world have access to the internet, and a large number of people are excluded from participating in the new digital public. there's kind of a hypermobility of some and the lack of mobility in others, and the others is Africa. So for example, Divine Fu, I think that's how you say the name, but refers to the struggles of African researchers who are forced to bend backwards to keep up with the so-called digital or global research network. So this kind of just shows that not all researchers have an equal access to digital materials, which thus inclines them to use it would mean kind of you inclining them to use it would be a bit insensitive and demanding in essence. And also, as I said in my previous podcast for the first week, there's this pressure for scholars to use the internet and to make use of it for their research. And I think this is unfair for scholars that haven't got access to such or don't have equal access to digital materials. And there's just become an obsession and a fetish with the new, and this obliges many scholars to get digital if they want their work to be kind of considered cutting edge. So this idea of keywords demonstrated that even if researchers can have equal access to digital materials, they may not be equally visible everywhere based on the system of keywords. The keywords that mostly come up is Western scholars' work. Keywords that mostly used or researched are the ones that belong to the Western scholars. So yeah, I think there's a very big issue here, and this needs to be unpacked further. As I said, now that I look at the digital aspect of it, I kind of see why it links to ethnography or visual ethnography, because of the digital part of the reading, which I didn't mention earlier. So now I can see that this can affect, yes, it's good to use visual materials, yes, it's good, it's innovative, yes, it's creative, but not everyone has equal access to it. So what do we do then? So yeah, let me leave that one for now. I'm going to have a look at the interview with Dr. Lidwid with Miriam, which was also very, 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 very useful in understanding ethnography and just understanding how important it is for research. So the interview, so Dr. Lidwe African Studies, the research masters, when it first kind of began. So she's an ethnographer, and ethnography is kind of often used, as we've seen, in anthropology and in African studies. I think the interview kind of begins with the idea of the colonial roots of anthropology and how there needs to be a lot done on this. Dr. Lidwe mentions that there's other fields are seeming to make more progress with the decolonization of the academia compared to African studies. So there has been kind of like a slow progress in African studies compared to other fields. As I already mentioned in the ethical collaboration reading, there is kind of the idea that knowledge production should be locations for knowledge productions are the Western world, that, you know, African countries aren't capable. Even just simple things like that, you know, starting there, and even the fact that Western scholars are never willing to leave their country, pay a big amount of money to go to Africa to kind of attend a conference, that in itself shows the kind of difference in the two worlds, and how one is kind of in essence one is superior to the other. So then Miriam asks, how do we decolonize African studies? And I even kind of throughout this interview, it got me thinking about these ideas and, you know, how do we actually decolonize? There's a lot of discussions on this, but how do we make this happen? How can we have a how can we actually unpack this problem? And Dr. Lidwade, I really feel bad saying her name incorrect, but so she mentions in answering this question, she says that this will require a whole world of kind of reordering. Like, it's complex. There's not even just one route to decolonizing African studies. There's so many things that need to be unpacked and so many things that need to be considered. And especially it will be more complex because it's hard to kind of bring these difficult worlds together and kind of unpacking each one and solving the problem. I don't think it's as easy as it sounds. So also she mentions how there is a preference in that's placed, so there's a value placed on Western academics over African academics. There's a preference in essence, and this quite links really well with, this is why I decided to do the collaboration, the ethical collaboration reading first and then look at the interview after, because I think they are quite they linked quite well for me. I think they flow from one another and they reaffirm the ideas. So the interview reaffirms the ideas that I have seen in the reading. And I think one of the really important things that I picked up from her response to how do we decolonize Africa was that the Western researcher needs to be aware of their privileges. It's important that they realize that, okay, I am superior, my world is superior to this, to the African world, and that maybe being conscious of that is a starting point, because once you're conscious of something, then you make an effort to kind of not make the same mistakes that everyone else is making. So yeah, that was quite interesting for me. I think as an African, and as someone that wants to go into anthropology and wants to do research, I think it is important that we decolonize the academia, and it's important that we unpack these. But I think there's a lot of discussions, and yes, discussions are useful, but I sometimes wonder if there's anything actually being done beyond those discussions. So yeah, I think that was a very, very, very interesting interview. Amongst other things, she talks about ethnography and her work, and, you know, how beyond ethnography, she talks about something I picked up on, was the fact that she explains how it is important towards the end, how it's important to cross bridges into other disciplines, and how that is important for your personal growth as a researcher. I mean, yes, you can be passionate about one specific area, but you shouldn't be kind of stuck on that one area. I think you should make the effort to kind of cross into different areas, because you may learn a lot from that. And she explained how she has in the past crossed into different areas and has learned a lot from that experience. It might be challenging, as Miriam mentions, that, you know, sometimes they don't see your vision, sometimes they're not interested in what you're interested in. But I think